WGS on KMOX. Beautiful day out there. Happy Wednesday to you. My next guest in studio is Kevin McDonald. Kevin is not a friend. Kevin is a brother. He was a drummer in the Dave Glover Band for, it feels like 10 years, but he said more like a year and a half, two years.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple years.
It was an era. It was an era.
Good times.
Good times. And Kevin and I recently reunited when the Glover Band did our gig at Del Mar Hall a couple weeks ago, and Kevin was in one of the bands, and we just got to talking, and he is the executive director of Music Moves Us, and we talked a lot about it that night of the gig, and I love everything about it and really wanted to introduce you guys to it. So great to be back together.
I appreciate it so
much.
Yeah,
and kind of roll out what it is.
It's an organization that I put together last July. I started working on it. A lot of assistance from ChatGPT on how to start a 501c3, you know, and just getting the application was a big job. And, you know, I got through all that. And within a month, which is ridiculous from what everybody tells me, I was certified with the IRS as a 501c3 nonprofit and registered with the state of Missouri. And, ready to go.
Yeah.
And now the real work began.
You know,
like trying to get a website and do all the stuff as a one-man show, basically.
So what are you trying to do?
Trying to help music to people. My main goal has been youth for a long time because I worked in youth as a psych tech for 4 years. And then I worked with students in student ministries for like 20 years. And did so much. And I don't know, that's really my target. But I'm not going to say no to anybody that says, can you come out and bring music for free? And I'm like, no, yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's older adults, which is not something I would set out to do, there's no way I'd turn it down.
Right.
Because I know what happens when they hear those old songs.
Yeah,
it's proven
absolutely.
That part of the brain is lighting up, and it's just amazing. Another part would be recovery. I'm not sober. But so many of my friends, I wish they are sober now, but so many weren't or aren't.
And yeah.
I wish they could have.
Yeah.
So I'd like to help out in that area too. One of my board members is a licensed counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it. I want to reach people who are unable to get out and go hear live music. They're not able to take guitar lessons right now or drum lessons. They're not able to experience music. They're getting fed. They're getting clothed. They're getting medications. They're getting well-treated. And they're getting the help they need, you know, a home for one, because the foster care system has basically taken over. You don't have orphanages or anything like that anymore.
So right.
Those guys that are locked up, I worked in a unit that was locked and these kids couldn't leave and they're getting great treatment. I totally back the therapist, everything. And that's who we want to assist. We don't want to bring in any counseling or anything. We just want to be musicians that help them with what they're doing already.
Isn't that great?
But bring music.
I mean, it sounds incredible. Kevin, how often are you working with kids who don't really have any sort of background with music? This is maybe their first time getting to experience something like this.
Well, we just got out this year. And so the kids in this shelter, it's a homeless shelter for kids that are currently high school students.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How in the heck did this happen? This
is
perfect. And so the kids that were into guitar already, that is working out pretty well. But some of the other kids that weren't musical, I thought, what can we do to assist their therapy? I said, let's write a song. You guys are the producer. You're the lyric writers, for sure. You're writing all the lyrics. Because a lot of emotions come out when you write lyrics. And so we were working on that. It was going well. And then it just kind of was tapering down. They weren't able to make it this night or whatever. And then we just finally set that on the side for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still there. We can pick back up. But the kids without music, you ask, they would rather, which is fine, just listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be happy to do that.
Yeah,
and
we did that.
I listened to their songs. Like, tell me what you like. And I brought speakers and we jammed on some stuff that I never heard before. I liked most of it.
Well, we know. Go ahead, Rach.
Well, I was just looking at your website here, which is musicmovesus.life. And, you know, one thing you guys were bringing up was like, it's just so helpful for these kids to sit and listen to music and then maybe talk about the feelings that it's bringing up. And I feel like so often we get into, everyone gets into a problem because there's a feeling they don't know, they don't want to confront, whatever. It's so important to feel these things and experience these things. So that must be incredible to see that like kind of unfolding in front of you.
Yes. Great. That's so great of insight because, yeah, I start learning about what they're really dealing with, you know, as a caring individual. That's it. A caring older adult, not a therapist, just a dude with a guitar and drum and don't, you know, I mean, just a rapport.
Well, it's so you and I both know the true magic of live music. Mm-hmm. And I have referenced this several times, but the first time I saw real live music was in the only party I went to in high school. And it was in a guy's basement. And a couple of guys were in the band who I knew. And I walked downstairs and they were launching into
Rock Candy.
Rock Candy.
Yeah.
And the drummer's name was Tim Seagull. I'll never forget that.
Fuck.
And then they hit that first chord and they had big Marshall stacks and a tiny little basement, and my life changed. Like when that chord hit me in the chest,
man,
like this is something different.
We're from the same cloth. Yeah.
And so for kids who never experienced that, it's criminal.
It is, yeah. Like a big sub at a concert, they've never felt that, you know. And it's like, gosh.
And you want to talk about something at Del Mar Hall the other night?
This is an example. Yeah, there was a guy up there singing before me. He's a nice guy. And he introduced a song, Dear Prudence by the Beatles. And he affiliates it with his brother. And I had tears because this was a passionate moment for the singer. And everybody could tell that this is the real deal. This is not just, let's sing and clap and party all the time. Let's let music help heal us.
Yeah.
And continue to bring up those memories to help us heal and to be better, you know, and to always keep that other person alive.
Yeah.
You know, and that was Dave, by the way. He was the singer. He was the guy who was, man, that your set was just amazing. But that, to me, was the highlight for me personally.
Me too.
I loved the band. I loved the songs. I loved you singing and sweating, but that stole the show for me.
Yeah, that was one of the nicest moments in my life. For
really?
Real. Yeah. I hadn't played in a few years. I didn't know if I could still do it. I didn't know if the chops would still be there, my voice. And I had a good night. And it's, you're so right. It sometimes it's just about partying. Sometimes it's about playing Beastie Boys, watching people dance.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's about so much more. And that was a great moment.
It was. It reminded me of the El Monstero, Wish You Were Here element of that service.
Yes.
When I saw that the first time, I was, oh my gosh, this is all these people together are helping the griever, you know, the person who's still grieving, and you got 20,000 people giving you a big hug.
Yeah.
And the band's giving you a big hug. It's amazing.
If you guys are just joining us, my very good friend, former bandmate, Kevin McDonald is with us, executive director of Music Moves Us. You can go to musicmovesus.life. And the basic, deal is trying to bring music to at-risk kids. And really anyone, you know, but especially at-risk kids, and introduce them maybe for the first time to music, whether it's just playing live music for them or it's having them play an instrument. And we have a lot of generous people out there. I told you I have a brand new Yamaha drum set that's yours if you want it.
Oh,
you can
have
it. And give it away. What are we going to do?
I'll find a home for it. Maybe even at the shelter we've been going. I've been bringing a, not a cajon, but a djembe.
Yeah.
Plan that. But it's more a guitar thing.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for the shout out, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Kev, what do you think?
It's great. I mean, it's got to be...
Kev's my metal guy.
Yeah. You don't want to talk to me about soothing music. That's just not going to come out. But I think what's interesting is... You guys, especially as musicians, but almost everybody that I know, because I'm obviously not a musician in any way, But the people that I know all talk about the same idea. There's something that got it, something that hooked them in the beginning. And I have it to listening music, not playing it, right? But I think it's really fascinating to know. One of my best friends in college, his wife was studying music therapy and how it was going to be used to help people with various mental illness, physical recovery from surgery, psychological issues. This is like a big thing. And she explained a lot of how her thesis was working. She was working on grad student. And it's cool to see now it's just like mainstream. Like, this was 30 years ago, and it was it was known, but I mean, it's being explored, and now I'm seeing, hey, just a regular guy decides this is what I want to do. I want to help people because it's that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish they were able to get into these places I'm talking about. I don't know if they've yet been allowed in there like they should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not the negative against the facility. It's just, I just don't know if it's that widespread yet to where they get the therapists in there, because I can't wait till they can get in there.
So, Kev, what can people do? How can they help out?
Well, first off, I'm building a team of musicians and singers and tech people, anybody that wants to be a part of it and share any amount of time. I have my flyer, the recent one says, let's say one time a year.
Oh.
Something like that, which isn't much of a commitment, but it would mean a lot to have somebody sign up for that. And I have 10 or so people signed up.
Good. You'll have more after this. A lot of musicians. Vic Souders was at the show the other night. He's like, is this Kevin from Impala? Like,
yes. Who was that?
Vic Souders.
Vic Souders.
Yeah. So we will do anything we can. Thanks. And we'll continue to stay on this. And you just let us know what you need and we'll find it.
Man, I appreciate you guys.
You're welcome.
So much, all of you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
On KMOX. Yeah, Vic's got some stuff to donate to the cause. Love that.
Nice.
Love everything about that. And I love how generous the DGS audience always is.
Yeah.
You guys always step up.
It stands out.
You know what I kind of discovered last night? Liminal spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar?
Yeah, isn't it a space where it's like you feel like you've been there before?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, the ones I was seeing were just sort of like weirdly shot videos of like a rich person's house in the 1970s that hasn't been lived in for 20, you know what I mean? Just like it kind of very vibey. I kind of liked it.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll see it's like a hotel lobby situation or like a train station lounge.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're neat. They're neat to check out.
You know what I was thinking about? And this is going to be kind of soapboxy, so prepare yourselves. But everything that's going on, the one thing I feel like I can plant my flag on and I can die on this hill is that somewhere along the line, this stopped being about us and it became about celebrities and politicians and the government and what they're doing and what they're not doing. And I understand that as individual people were interested in it, but this is about us, the individual, the people of America. And I'm not worried about France right now, just talking about our country. But somehow we need to take the throne back. That I don't expect the government to do things for me, but to the extent that it exists, it should be about me. How are you going to protect me? How are you going to serve me? And it has just become, in my humble opinion, that we exist to fund them and their shenanigans. And now we exist to consume them. And watch their content and complain and bitch and moan and be aggravated. And it has, my life has never felt less like my life when I compare it to the old times. Does that make any sense? They have just, first they take our money and then they just poke us in the eye. with the things they spend our money on. And then they have this attitude that they're so much better than us and they're really the main character. And I don't know. Sometimes you just have to stand up and go, no. This is not the way it's supposed to be. You feel me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I've never lived during a time where I felt like things were in balance and now they're off balance.
That's a great point.
Yeah, same.
I just feel like it's so noticeable now. I think the big thing is they don't even try to hide it. And that is pretty infuriating. Like, if you're going to act like this, you could have the decency to be secretive about it.
Yeah, don't let us see it, right?
Right, but I think this kind of thing has been going on the whole time.
Well, think about it in your lifetime, Dave. And actually, I have a similar thing to this on the rundown. In your lifetime, and mine, but starting a little before me, all the things that used to be trustworthy became untrustworthy. Mm-hmm. Because you start off, you've got Vietnam, you get into that with BS and lies and for no good reason. And it turns into, Vietnam, Watergate, Iran-Contra, the CIA in South America and the drug running that we now know about, right? The war on drugs where the CIA is actually helping drug dealers in Colombia in the 1980s, covering for some and going after others. Clinton Lewinsky, the Iraq War. The drone strikes with, you know, no court authorization, all of the stuff we've seen since 2016. Before that, it was at least covered. I think Rach nailed it. Before that, there was at least a veneer that made it seem like it wasn't as bad as it is. But since then, there has been nothing done to reestablish trust. It's only going the opposite direction. And part of that's our fault. Because half of us don't participate at all in the political process. Half the country does not participate. And then those of us that do, we don't participate fully. We're not out there in primaries. We're not out there making our voices known. Some people do, but certainly not enough. And it might be because none of us agree on things, or it may be because life gets in the way. For certain people, I do know people that I'm like, I don't have time for politics. I got to work. I got 4 kids. I got all these other things. I don't have time to worry about any of that stuff. And that's part of the problem. When you think about the old saying about you could make it about any group, right? Give them an inch, they'll take a mile. Well, we've given them a mile and they've taken hundreds of miles on their own because we've given it to them.
Yeah.
And we used to at least have the idea that the people there were not there to take from us. But now that's gone. And clearly they are. Clearly they're there to get rich, to gain power, and to do whatever the hell they want.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday. 2:33, let's do DGS Happy Hour. Anyone got any topics? You can bring them up, kick them around.
I'll start. I love bagels.
There you go. Counterpoint.
Yeah, I also love bagels.
Don't that one.
Kevin McDonald, my buddy, who's doing the music, not therapy, he's very careful about that, but music outreach to at-risk youth, brought us a bunch of bagels. Making friends with bagels.
I mean, it's the easiest way to get me on your side. I'll be real about that. See, I talk all this trash on the people in Congress and like, they're not there for us. You put a bagel spread in front of me my first day in office and I'm like, sure, what do you want?
Yeah, I'm voting for. I mean, I always feel like you wouldn't even have to like bribe me to get me to vote for your bill. You just have to ask.
Yeah, just show me some kindness.
We've talked about this. I'm a people pleaser. You just say, like, would you please mind voting for the deport everyone law? And I'm like, okay.
Did you guys see the the story of a guy? It's like in Colombia or something. He got really drunk and went for a walk in the woods and disappeared. And so when he didn't come back, a search party was put together. And while he was out there, he saw the search party and decided to join it and look for the poor schmuck who was lost, not realizing it was him. And so he was with the search party for a few hours until someone was like,
Oh, Larry. That's pretty drunk.
Never at any point he thought like, wow, that's my name. That is so wild.
He's out there in the woods yelling his own name.
We have got Larry! We have got to find Larry. As a fellow Larry.
It's all about the Larrys.
It almost feels like I'm the one that's
missing. This is apropos of nothing, but the administration has announced that if there is need for further aggression with Iran, it's no longer going to be called Epic Fury. And I know these things have had stupid names going all the way back. And maybe it's just that I don't like this administration, or maybe it's that Hegseth's such a douche, but it's going to be called Operation Sledgehammer.
Can I tell you what my problem is with it?
Sure.
It's not with the name itself. I don't like that we, as the general public, know that it's like, you know what? We're thinking about changing the name to something even more tough. That feels weird that... I'm not saying like you should hide things from the American people. It's just, it does take away some of the dignity from the situation, does it not? Like when you're like, you know what, we're gonna make it sound
Operation
even,
kick their ass.
Right. We're gonna sound even more like we're in charge. Like, no, you sound like you're nine. It doesn't make me go like, whoa, they're serious now, sledgehammer. It just makes me go, okay, when is this going to end? Because you told me it was going to be 2 weeks.
Boy, that's a great question.
When is this going to end? Or are we just going to keep renaming it to more and more badass things?
Would you like to know what I think is going to happen?
Let's hear it.
I'd say somewhere between next week and the middle of summer, Donald Trump is going to continue to be frustrated because, as I said yesterday, he's playing baseball and they're playing soccer. They're playing two different games. His game is, we're America. We got all these missiles. We're going to drop half of them on you and you're going to cry like babies. And then you're going to surrender and give us your enriched uranium and it'll be another win. But he didn't take into account what all of his experts said because they leaked it and Axios wrote an article on it. And they all said no. Because they knew what he doesn't, and that is Iran is built differently. One, the people in charge don't give a rat's ass about the citizenry. So if they're suffering, they don't care. They've got their nests feathered. They're ready to go. They're fighting a religious war against the great Satan. They're not going to give in. And I don't think they're going to give Donald Trump anything like what he wants. And my prediction is he's just going to leave and say, we won. And Europe, you can handle the Strait of Hormuz yourself. And we have a satellite watching the enriched uranium. No need to take it out. We kick their butt. Everything's great. And I think it's going to be at best an empty victory, if you can even call it a victory. Yes, we decimated their military, such as it was. I don't know about you. I've never worried about having a conventional war with Iran.
No.
The CIA says they weren't that close to enriching, to creating a nuclear device. Do I want them to have a nuke? No. But like yesterday, when the president now very famously said, when the reporter said, to what extent you take into consideration while fighting this war the financial situation of Americans, and he said twice, not at all. I don't give it any thought. I'm singularly minded, and that is Iran cannot have nuclear weapon. Okay, I get it, but I think you're doing a thing at this point. Like, that's your thing. You want to go down in history like Winston Churchill, like, and he just said every drop of a hat said they're never going to have nuclear weapon. Well, they don't. And I don't think they're going to. And I thought you obliterated them a couple of months ago, which you clearly didn't. I just think that Trump went into something that he didn't understand, and it's going to end badly for us. That's my prediction.
Well, think about it. How many times have we entered a situation like this historically? Take Trump out of it. How did it end in Iraq? How did it end in Afghanistan? How did it end in Vietnam? How do we not learn from these things? Nobody seems to learn from the past that every time we've done something like this, it's been a much bigger problem than anybody thought it would be. And it's cost people elections, and it's cost regular people their lives, because you're putting everybody's life on the line that's going over there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we don't have, you know, troops on the ground now, and hopefully we never do, because that'll lead to more death. But yeah, we don't seem to pay attention. And part of this, you know, this is partly on the people that are hired surrounding the White House, right? Because the standard now is you agree with the boss or you're probably getting fired, as opposed to tell the boss what he needs to know and what he needs to hear. It's now tell him what he wants to hear or you're gone. Because that's what happened from the first administration, right? All those people that started there were gone at least midway through, maybe a little. Some of them lasted a little longer than the first couple years. So when you act like a CEO, but world politics and war are not business deals. In a business deal, your ultimate leverage is that you can walk away, right?
Yeah.
It's my company. I'm walking away. In international politics and things of war, you can't just go, well, we're done. I'm walking away. Because you've created a mess, and a mess that's going to continue to bite you in the ass. We still have problems in Iran because of the dumb crap we did in the 1950s. None of us were alive, but we're paying the price. Because the United States government backed the Shah and did not back a democratically elected leader that we didn't like. And again, we aren't going to like leaders. They were not good people. That's not the argument. But we went in there for probably because it was related to business and oil, and people and companies had big interest there. So we were going to put a more Western friendly person in there, even though the people chose another path. And we are still dealing with those problems, and we're not learning from it. We just keep doing those things over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, now the problem with the modern time is you've got a boss who's a CEO who's going to treat it like it's his company, but the country is not your company. And it doesn't work that way. Those other countries, they're not making a deal with you. They're trying to survive the way that they want to survive. And I'm not saying they're right. The Iranian leadership is horrible. They murder their own people in just plain view. You know, they hide, they block most of the internet from their people because they don't want people to know what's going on outside. Similar to what you have in North Korea. Not arguing anything's good there. I'm arguing about what's good for us and what will get us the result we want without costing us. We're already at $30 billion in the hole. In how long? How long have we been doing this?
8 weeks.
So what's it going to be in another 8 weeks? It's going to be $60 billion, and it's going to keep on going up. And how many years is it going to take to clean up the mess that comes from it? Modern history too often ignore the long-term cost.
Now I'm probably just pigpiling a little bit, but it also bothered me yesterday when the president said that the White House was an S house. Did you hear that?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. He said during a speech, he said, Melania asked me to keep this non-dirty. So I'll just say this, that when I got to the White House, it was an S house. And now it's tippy top, he said. Don't say that.
He's like, also, this, if he's like, that whole East Wing is gone. The whole hallways are full of
there's
dust.
There's just a giant hole. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't surprise. If you were a billionaire living in like a penthouse in New York City, I do think the White House would be a step down from like your gold toilet and everything you had going on there. So I guess I get where he's coming from, but it's pretty nice to the average person. And it does reveal a lot about how out of touch this person is.
One last thing, and I promise we won't return to politics. Remember all the crazy posts in the Obamas as monkeys and all that?
Yeah.
And there is this staffer, not named.
Right.
She's been named. Her name is Natalie Harp. She's about Rach's age, mid-30s. And evidently the deal is she answers to no one but the president. She doesn't vet anything through Susie Wiles. And every day she brings him a physical stack of paper that are images of memes that people have posted that she thinks the president might want to repost. And then he'll say, yes, yes, no, 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 yes, no, yes. and then she'll post them for him. But yeah, so now we have a name. Now we know that that's actually happening. And, you know, the tea behind the scenes is that no one likes her and she's hurting the president, but he loves memes. And that's why he, I think he posted 55 times in 3 hours last night in the middle of the night.
Wait, so she posted the Obama's as apes thing.
Yes.
But and she still has a job?
Yes.
And now we have like her name and everything?
Yes. And the Jesus thing.
Okay.
Yep. Did I just bring the room down?
I had heard of this woman about a week ago. I didn't realize that she was the one behind the very racist video. But yeah, interesting person. They tried to keep her out of a couple different things. I feel like maybe it was Mar-a-Lago. There was like not a place for her to live, so she lived in like a closet or something in order to keep her access to the president. Probably getting that wrong. I read the piece about a week ago. I'm a little fuzzy, but yeah, the interesting person. Excited to learn more about her and whatever's going on there.
We segue into a live endorsement. It's been a weird show. Good show. Interesting show, but emotional. So we spent a good amount of time today talking about charitable things and especially being kind to young people, especially people who are trying to reach out to you. And Rach, I saw this story about this horrible woman in Congress who received a letter from a young man, I believe, and answered in a strange way.
Yes. So a North Carolina fourth grader, 10-year-old little boy, submitted a persuasive essay in favor of electric vehicles to his congresswoman. Now, this was a part of a school assignment. So his teacher told everyone in his class, you're going to write a persuasive essay, and then we're going to mail it to the public figure that you are writing to. So Christian Mango is 10 years old, and he decided to write a letter to his representative, and that is Representative Virginia Fox from North Carolina. She is 82 years old. And Christian just wrote to her and explained, from what he understood at the age of 10, to be the benefits of e-vehicles. And he even suggested, like, maybe we could give out a $5,000 tax rebate to electric vehicle owners because of, you know, it's good for the environment. There's no gas. He says they're better than normal cars. So, you know, Christian's writing this letter. He is 10. Can't stress that enough. He receives a letter back from Representative Virginia Fox, 82 years old. And in her letter, she directed this young student to 6 different articles about the disastrous record of policies enacted to address, quote, climate change. So she's basically telling this little boy, climate change is a hoax. She also warned that he and his classmates are going to have to worry about the national debt crisis soon. So he needs to get to thinking about that and how he's going to tackle that. It had nothing to do with anything he wrote to Virginia Fox about. And also accused Christian's teacher of, quote, indoctrinating him, saying, incidentally, please ask your teacher to explain propaganda to you. While I will never be able to know you, my guess is that your teachers will not give you a good educational experience and help you to think, as they are too interested in indoctrinating you. How sad. Wrote this to a 10-year-old. It ended with a plug to subscribe to Virginia Fox's newsletter and to follow her on social media.
Kev?
I think she showed that little kid.
This is the same kind of person that would be so offended if you were disrespectful to them.
Yeah, good point.
If you just like didn't hold a door for this kind of person. I'm talking about the important congressperson who's been around for 60 years and all that. Well, you should respect me. Where's your respect for a 10-year-old? He's a kid. You should get that same kind of respect in return, which is none. You can disagree with what the kid's saying if you have a different view. You don't need to scold the kid like a like you're the brat.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be the grown-ass person. And when you're in your 80s and you've been in office forever, maybe understand that it's a kid and you're not talking to a 30-year-old. You want to scold a 30-year-old? You want to scold me? Go ahead. It's like on like there, right? It's adult against adult. I always thought we weren't supposed to fight kids.
Well, maybe once you're 82, you can kind of just circle back around and just be as mean and nasty as you want. I just found that to be incredibly disgusting. Like, you can disagree with everything the kid wants and says. It's probably better to just ignore the letter than to reply in the way that she did. But if she wanted to reply, you can reply nicely, politely. You know, just with some basic human decency. But we are so lost as a society that it's like, yeah, you know what? I better put that 10-year-old in his place. How dare he waste my precious time by writing me a letter? Ugh. Anyway, follow me on social media.